What if everything you learned about American history was a carefully curated story designed to make you comfortable with power?
In 1492, when Christopher Columbus stepped onto Caribbean shores, he didn't discover anything. The Arawak people who greeted him with gifts and hospitality were part of millions living across sophisticated civilizations with advanced agriculture, architecture, and governance.
Columbus immediately saw them differently. "They would make fine servants," he wrote. "With 50 men, we could subjugate them all." Within 2 years, half of Hispaniola's native population was dead or enslaved.
This pattern invasion, justified as discovery, genocide, rebranded as progress, would repeat for 4 centuries.
By 1890, native populations had collapsed from millions to 250,000. The Wounded Knee Massacre that year, where cavalry killed 300 Sioux, including women and children, wasn't an aberration, but a culmination.
What makes this unbearable isn't just the violence, but the erasure. Generations learned about brave explorers and manifest destiny, never about systematic destruction of entire worlds.
Controlling history has always been essential to maintaining power.
American prosperity was built on the deliberate theft of human beings. By 1787, slavery had become the economic foundation, particularly in the South. After Bacon's Rebellion in 1676 united poor whites and black slaves against colonial elites, the ruling class deployed a devastating solution: create racial divisions to prevent class solidarity. New laws stripped black people of rights, while slightly improving conditions for poor whites. Racism wasn't a byproduct of slavery, it was engineered to sustain it. The brutality defies comprehension. Slave ships packed people so tightly they had not so much room as a man in his coffin. Yet resistance never ceased. Nat Turner's 1831 rebellion killed 60 whites before being crushed. Emancipation arrived as military necessity, not moral awakening. Reconstruction's brief flowering saw remarkable achievements: public education, black representatives, new social institutions, before being crushed through terrorist violence and political betrayal in 1877. What followed was nearly a century of Jim Crow, revealing how thoroughly racism had been institutionalized throughout American society.
Women's subjugation was uniquely intimate, occurring within families and private spaces. Early American law rendered married women legally invisible. Husbands controlled property, wages, and retained rights to chastisement. Women were denied education, voting, and most professions. When Abigail Adams urged John to remember the ladies during the Revolution, her plea went unheeded. The 1820s cult of true womanhood taught women to be timid, doubtful, and clingingly dependent. Yet resistance persisted. Anne Hutchinson defied Massachusetts church fathers in the 1630s, insisting ordinary people could interpret the Bible. She was banished for heresy. By the early 1800s, women in industrial work organized America's earliest strikes. In 1834, Lowell mill workers walked out, one delivering a flaming Mary Wollstonecraft speech on the rights of women. The 1848 Seneca Falls Convention declared all men and women are created equal. Despite winning the vote in 1920, deeper power dynamics persisted until the 1960s feminist movement.
American textbooks present steady progress toward prosperity. The reality is continuous class struggle. From the start, divisions were stark. In 1630, Governor Winthrop declared, "Some must be rich, others poor." By the 1770s, Boston's top 5% controlled 49% of taxable assets. The Revolution changed little. The Constitution protected property through a Senate defending against citizens' temporary errors and delusions. Industrialization intensified conflicts. The 1877 railroad strike became the most tumultuous labor conflict in history, spreading nationwide after wage cuts. In Pittsburgh, crowds battled troops. 24 deaths, 79 buildings burned.
By the late 1800s, J.P. Morgan controlled over $22 billion, while Rockefeller's Standard Oil ruthlessly eliminated competitors. Workers organized through the IWW, forming one big union in 1905. The Great Depression revealed fundamental instability, 15 million unemployed, while food rotted in warehouses. Roosevelt's New Deal provided limited reforms designed to stabilize capitalism and defuse rebellion, empowering trade associations while excluding consumers and unions.
America's self-image as a reluctant defender of freedom contradicts historical evidence. Between 1798 and 1895, the State Department recorded 103 armed interventions across Argentina, Nicaragua, Japan, China, Hawaii, and elsewhere to protect American interests. The 1898 Spanish-American War marked a turning point. McKinley's administration rushed to war, partly to prevent Cuban revolutionaries from winning independence without American control. After defeating Spain, the U.S. bought the Philippines for $20 million, triggering brutal conflict against Filipino independence fighters. Mark Twain condemned it. "We have pacified some thousands of the islanders and buried them, destroyed their fields, burned their villages." Throughout the 20th century, interventions prioritized economic interests. The CIA overthrew Iran's democratically elected Mossadegh in 1953 after he nationalized British oil. In Guatemala, the U.S. engineered a 1954 coup against Arbenz when he threatened United Fruit Company's landholdings. Vietnam followed this pattern. Despite freedom rhetoric, the U.S. supported French colonialism and prevented elections that would have united the country under Ho Chi Minh. As Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman wrote 3 years before 9/11, "We are not hated because we practice democracy. We are hated because our government denies these things to people whose resources are coveted by our multinational corporations."
Throughout history, ordinary Americans have organized against injustice, though these struggles rarely appear in standard histories. Labor battles have been fierce. In 1934, Minneapolis Teamsters gained such community support they shut down the city except for essential services. When police killed two strikers, 50,000 attended their funeral. That same year, 325,000 textile workers formed flying squadrons, battling guards and disabling machinery. The 1955 Montgomery bus boycott demonstrated collective power. Despite arrests and bombings, black residents sustained carpools and walked for a year, until the Supreme Court outlawed bus segregation. Women's movements repeatedly challenged patriarchy. In 1970, over 50,000 women marched down Fifth Avenue demanding equal opportunity, abortion access, and free childcare. Environmental activism has saved communities. When Love Canal resident Lois Gibbs discovered her neighborhood sat on toxic waste, she organized residents and forced government to relocate 833 families, creating the Superfund program. Anti-war movements challenged American militarism. During Vietnam, draft resistance exploded. By 1969, nearly 34,000 men were classified as draft delinquents. Veterans themselves testified about atrocities in winter soldier investigations. As Frederick Douglass observed, "Power concedes nothing without a demand."
The American system survives by distributing just enough wealth to prevent rebellion. The middle layers, professionals, managers, small business owners, function as guards protecting the wealthy from the poor. As capitalism increasingly fails both groups, we may see a population united for fundamental change. This requires taking power from corporations and reconstructing the economy around shared work and universal access to necessities. The needed revolution would be unlike any before, not centralized bureaucracy, but networks of small cooperative groups making decisions in workplaces and neighborhoods, creating a nonviolent culture where differences become strengths rather than reasons for domination. By recovering voices of those who fought for justice, Native Americans facing genocide, enslaved people fighting for freedom, workers organizing against exploitation, women demanding equality, a different American tradition emerges. If we understand that positive change has always come from organized movements rather than benevolent leaders, we might stop waiting for political saviors. History isn't a predetermined march of progress, but choices made by real people.